Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land of Grand Theft University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of July 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Fake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, more than 500 agricultural organizations have written a letter to House Leader John Boehner, asking him not to split or segregate food, nutrition, and farm program funding. And the cyber snooping revelations from Eric Snowden have caused France to recoil, suggesting it might have an impact on U.S.-EU trade relations. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and more ag news stories. And then, as we close out our half hour together, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated from Kansas City as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. July corn at 6.78 and a quarter, a settlement price there up 5.5 cents. September down 3/4 at 5.32 and a quarter. And December corn unchanged on the day at 5.02 and 3/4. March futures 5.14 and 3/4 unchanged, and May at 5.22 and a half unchanged on the afternoon. July futures of next year unchanged as well at $5.29 and a half. Wheat futures in Chicago finished the July up 8.25 at 6.57. 7.75 in the hard red in Kansas City at $6.83.5, up 9.5 cents. From the soy complex now, bean futures July contract $15.83.5, up 10.5. August at $14.41.25 a bushel, 7.75 higher. In September, soybeans at $12.97.5, up 3.75. November bean futures $12.50.75, up 8.25. January contract 8 cents higher at $12.56.5. And the March at $12.58.75, up 8.5 cents. Bean meal futures at $4.90.60, up 3.60. Bean oil at $47.22, 30 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the August at $121.95, up a nickel. October at $126.22.5, 30 cents higher. August feeders at $150.95, 5 cents higher. And the September's 2.5 lower today there at $153.30. July lean hogs at $101.62.5, up 62.5 cents. This is the Closing Market Report, comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon trading at $101.11 a barrel, $1.50 higher. RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.83.4. That's 5.1 cents higher. Natural gas trading today at $3.68.4, up 3 cents on the afternoon. And ethanol at $2.46.7, 5.7 cents higher. Diesel fuel $2.95. That's up 4.9. In the gold futures at $1,251.90, $8.50 higher. The U.S. dollar trading 83.25. That's down 2.8 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. It's currently 67 degrees outside. Scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. The high is supposed to get to 76 today. Light southwest winds and a chance of precipitation that's set at 30%. Tonight, isolated showers before 1 a.m., partly cloudy, a low of 60. South winds at 6 miles an hour, rainfall chance at 20%. And then tomorrow for July 4th, Independence Day, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Those will come after 1 in the afternoon. Mostly sunny, otherwise a high near 80 degrees and a south-southeast wind at 3 to 7 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy on Thursday evening, a low of 62 for the fireworks. Southeast winds at about 6 miles an hour.
They'll be calm after midnight, and then on Friday, partly sunny skies and a high of 83. Calm winds out of the south-southwest at 6 miles an hour. Friday night, partly cloudy and a low of 66. A 30% chance of rain and thunderstorms on Saturday, partly sunny and a high of 82. Mostly cloudy Saturday evening and a low of 68. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City at the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of July. On the phone line with us, Jackie Vakes. It's Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
And looking forward to the 4th of July, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah. I want to say happy 4th of July to you and all of the people who listen. You know, let's hope it's a good, safe one. And let's hope it's dry, maybe. That would be nice.
Markets closed at noon today. They won't reopen again until, I think, 8:30 on Friday morning, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so let's get right into what happened. Start with the corn, please.
Well, when you looked at corn today, I think you can go straight across all three products. We saw, a push down in the corn market. We saw Informa come out with acres. Their acres were less than what the USDA had at 95.26, but at the same time, their yield was at 160, put them at a record high production number of 14.26, and that would actually be 255 million more bushels than what the USDA had. So not necessarily great news. Market reacted to it. Not nearly as deep a cut as I might have expected it to be. And then at the end of the day, you know, with the rules at the CME being that if you own shares at all, you must be flat to market before you leave for the weekend. And open interest and volume have been dropping steadily the last few days. We expect a lot of people are out of there for Friday, too. And therefore, we just saw some nice short covering come in right at the end of the day, gave us at least a steady close. On beans, we saw a similar situation. I think the beans are beginning to realize that we're to a point now where, you know, continuing to plant beans probably isn't making a whole lot of sense in some respects, because if it rains, you can't get back on the land for a week to 10 days in some places where it's really saturated. And so I think they expect that when we get the USDA report next week, Thursday, we'll probably see a lower yield expectation on beans. And so that all of that has everything, you know, had the impact on those two. When you looked at wheat, now wheat was euphoric today because China came in about 360,000 metric tons of soft red wheat for this next year. And so, you know, that was a good thing, but kind of a normal before a holiday type trade.
Yeah, speaking of the wheat, rain has been wreaking havoc across a good portion of both the southern part of the soft red or the soft red areas and then the hard red areas as well. They're trying to harvest wheat, but it's kind of tough to move a combine when you can't get on the soils.
Well, that isn't the truth. And then, you know, the flip side to that, Todd, is that, you know, everybody's expecting we're so tight on corn stocks, you know, that we're going to see this explosive basis and everything coming in. And when the reality is that we might actually see feed wheat come into the marketplace to take the place of some corn during this July-August timeframe when we are so very tight. So, you know, it's a big question mark, I guess, in the background of the traders' minds. And even in my mind, when I look at September being the one contract that was actually down on the end of the day, does this mean that traders are starting to think wheat will actually help us get through?
Well, does that mean you think wheat will move lower in price on an abundant harvest? Is that the idea here?
Well,
for soft red, that is.
I think it could mean just that basically the wheat, I don't know about the wheat price necessarily getting a lot lower than what it is, but it may come in closer to what corn is. And let's face it, if you don't have feed to feed, you'd be happy to pay even a higher price if you had to. We saw it happen before.
I suppose, really, you would have to look at the July to July, and the spread between the two is only 5 cents, isn't it?
Right.
And the hard red, right?
Right, in the hard red. Yeah. That is correct. And even when you look at the July to July in corn, it's 20 cents right now, but that's not huge. If you look at the September, not anywhere close. I mean, it doesn't look as if it would be competitive. But like I said, if you need feed, you're going to do whatever you've got to do.
All right. Okay. So there are some hurdles that have to be jumped here yet for the corn crop, and weather is the big one for the summer.
Well, that's true. And when I look at the weather, the potential for weather rallies, let's say, the first, of course, would be pollination. We know that we were late planted. We know we had about 43% planted in 1 week, which most of us estimate would push us out to the end of the second or the third, into the third week of July. And what I did, Todd, was I actually sat down and looked at the 10-day forecast for Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, took the average highs and average lows, took the growing degree days, but only from May through July. I kicked out April. And what it said to me was that we could see in the next 10 days, we could see Iowa tasseling. We could see Illinois and Indiana just starting to tassel on the later planted corn. Minnesota would be near to tasseling, but the interesting part with Minnesota is they would need to average 25 growing degree days, for the which would be a high of 85 and a low of 65 for the next 73 days in order to mature their corn. And 73 days picks up well. And so, you know, that's going to be something that's going to be a question. And then we've got kernel fill, and, you know, that's less dangerous time and, of course, frost potential. So I think, you know, the big thing we have to look at is that a lot of guys are extremely bullish on the crop, and I can understand that, especially guys who are in very bad areas and, you know, parts of Iowa. They just look around and there's nothing planted. How could we not be going through the roof? But we have to sit back and say, okay, we have potential here after the 4th of July weekend. We, if the weather doesn't cooperate with us, well, we're at a pretty low price for this time of year and for how late we planted the crop. Low prices usually bring on some export sales, which is what we need, because USDA upped our exports for corn by 600 million bushels. And beyond that, you know, what is to take us from going down? Now, the last 3 years, we put our lows in, you know, in the July-August time frame, and then just rallied from there. And we may actually do that this year, but we'll rally. But the question comes down to, where do we rally from?
Well, probably much lower, I suppose. but we'll and much lower maybe here, I guess. And we've kind of gone down and touched some areas that would be seen as support. Can they hold?
Well, you know, it was interesting to watch the market go down and broke the 498.5 and then went down and tested the 496.5. We have that 510 gap. You know, we almost filled it, but we just couldn't quite make it. And so I would think the 510 gap is going to be something that's going to be there, and the trade will be looking at it to see if they can fill it. But, you know, if there's absolutely no threatening weather coming out, and if we, when we look at the yield numbers that are going to come out of the USDA, or WASD, I should say, it is going to be based on trend line yields, adjusted for plant progress, which we know is slow, but then adjusted for crop ratings, which we know are high. And, you know, it's an immature crop, so it can't hardly help but be high rated at this point in time, but that doesn't make any difference. That's what they work on. And so I think that if the USDA comes in and doesn't change the yields, there's going to be a lot of disappointment. And yes, then I think we could go lower.
So but, do you really you think know, they'll try to change the yields next week from the World Agriculture Outlook Board?
No, I don't. I really don't see it, Todd. I'd be surprised. I think partially because we are as far behind as we are, and one thing they absolutely hate to do is lower the yield and then have to raise it again. 2009 was one of those situations where we know we were late planted and we ended up fortunate enough to have the long fall, and then with a 157 actually record crop. And so I really would be surprised if it comes to that type of thing.
Hey, thanks for taking the time with us, and have a great 4th of July.
You too. Take care.
You too. That's Jackie Vegg. She's with Stuart Peterson. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Hey, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. The markets are closed tomorrow, but the closing market report will be here. So tune in, and you can hear all kinds of good stuff, including a longer portion of the Commodity Week program that aired on Saturday over the weekend. We went an extra 10 minutes. You can hear that tomorrow right here on the Closing Market Report for Independence Day. Now here's your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, more than 500 ag businesses, commodity groups, and general farm organizations have sent a letter to House Speaker John Boehner asking that the House do not split nutritional programs from the Farm Bill. The letter comes as there is mounting interest among Republicans to divide the legislation into two bills, one that would include only nutrition programs and another that would include most of the rest of the Farm Bill, such as commodities, crop insurance, and trade. The House version of the Farm Bill failed 234 to 195 on June 20th. That marked the first time a major farm bill had failed to get a majority vote on the House floor. French officials say allegations that the United States has used electronic surveillance against European embassies could threaten the proposed transatlantic trade and investment partnership. French officials say that there could be no negotiations without guarantees that U.S. spying will stop immediately. Talks regarding the possible bilateral free trade agreement are scheduled to get underway next Monday in Northern Ireland. The EU-U.S. trade relationship is the largest in the world, with the trade of goods and services totaling nearly $2.7 billion every day. United Nations climate experts today say that global warming has accelerated since the 1970s and broke more countries' temperature records than ever before in the first decade of the new millennium. A new analysis from the World Meteorological Organization says average land and ocean surface temperatures from 2001 to 2010 rose above the previous decade and were almost a half degree Celsius above the 1961-1990 global average. The Commerce Department today says that the U.S. trade deficit increased in May to the highest level in 6 months as a weak global economy depressed U.S. export sales, while imports of autos and other non-petroleum products hit an all-time high. The trade deficit rose to $45 billion in May, up 12.1% from April. Exports slipped 0.3% to $187.1 billion as sales of American farm products dropped to the lowest point in more than 2 years. The U.S. deficit with China jumped 15.6% to $27.9 billion in May, close to the all-time monthly high set last November. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can find on our website at willag.org. Now up next, Darrell Good's thoughts on old crop soybeans from his weekly Outlook commentary. You can find it, and another article that is a bit of a dire warning titled, Is the U.S. Corn Boom Ending?, on the Farm Doc Daily website. I'll read you the last passage of the missive. In it, Darrell Good writes, in part, the recent period of growth in the U.S. corn industry appears to have peaked. The domestic ethanol market has hit the E10 blend wall and will be dependent on consumption of higher blends in order to expand total domestic consumption and to increase corn consumption. The domestic livestock industry is also mature and may require larger exports for production growth. And finally, the corn export market has become a lot more competitive in the past several years as high corn prices have stimulated an increase in world production. If the size of the U.S. corn market has peaked, says Good, a period of lower prices and reduced acreage may be required. Lower prices would be beneficial for the livestock industry, at least initially, he thinks. Lower crop farm incomes might result in some downward pressure on farmland prices, particularly if interest rates continue to increase. and making plans, he says, for such an adjustment seems prudent, while at the same time hoping for a surprise development on the demand side. You can read more from Daryl's post on the Farm Doc Daily website. There you'll also find an article pinned Monday asking whether or not old crop soybeans had finally been rationed. In it, he says, smaller U.S. soybean production in both 2011 and 2012 have caused the market to raise the price of the oilseed in hopes of slowing consumption. Each month since February, USDA has projected about 4% of the crop will be left by the time this fall arrives. 4% is what most people consider pipeline level, or in other words, just barely enough to get by.
The task of the market this year has been to monitor the rate of soybean consumption to determine if the pace has slowed sufficiently to maintain minimum pipeline stocks. With only about 10 weeks left in the marketing year, the uncertainty about the rationing process persists.
One of the primary indicators of how well the market has done its job of rationing is the pace or expected pace of exports. Good says just 4.4 million bushels of beans per week need to be exported from now until the end of the marketing year to meet USDA's May projection.
As of June 13th, the USDA reported unshipped export sales of 59 million bushels, so it appears that exports for the year will be very close to the current USDA projection.
The domestic use of soybeans has grown as the year has passed, but Good thinks that quickening pace has been slackening off, but not fast enough.
It now appears that soybean and soybean product prices will have to remain strong through the final quarter of the year in order to limit consumption to the available supply.
USDA will release the next monthly supply and demand tables for soybeans and corn July 11th. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. The folks at the Anderson's Climate Facility in Logansport, Indiana, join us now to take a look at the cash grain market. Bree Stauffer is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Bree. Thank you for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Hey, tell me a little bit about yourself real quickly, because we haven't talked to you before.
Yeah, I'm new account rep here for the Andersons. I'm originally from Delphi. I've been out in Iowa buying grain for a couple of years and excited to come back into the area. So.
Yeah. And where are you from originally?
Delphi, Indiana.
Yeah, so how is Iowa different than Indiana in terms of the grain movement?
In terms of grain movement, I feel as though basis strength is a little bit better come fall period than, say, in Iowa. Seems like there's a lot of space, really a lot of similarities, to be honest.
Yeah, and that probably has changed, I would think, in the last 5 years as space has been put in place and of course, as the ethanol industry has come about out there. So
Yes. Tell
me about what's happening in your elevator today.
Yep, today we've got some basis improvement here at Climbers Ethanol. We're now posted at $1.20 over the September, so it feels like kind of basis hit rock bottom there and is starting to firm up a bit. Hopefully we can see that same on the board. Today we had a strengthening market into the market close today at one early today at one for holiday trade and reconvene at 9:30 then on Friday. So we'll take this break here and reopen on Friday morning. Corn steady today and beans up 7, wheat up 7.
All right, thanks so much, Bree.
Yep, thank you.
Bree Stauffer is from the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon.
It's National Chocolate Wafer Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1806, Michael Keynes exhibited the first cultivated strawberry, combining size, flavor, and appearance at the Royal Horticultural Society. Europeans discovered wild strawberries in Virginia in 1588. Strawberries, by the way, are the only fruit with its seeds on the outside. In 1922, Fruit Garden and Home magazine was founded. 2 years later, the name of the publication was changed to the name it holds today, Better Homes and Garden. In 1924, Clarence Birdseye, with the financial backing of W. Hodges and others, founded the General Seafood Corporation. In 1929, foam rubber was developed at DuPont Laboratories in Birmingham. British scientist E.A. Murphy used a kitchen mixer to froth natural latex rubber into its foam counterpart. Murphy's colleagues were generally underwhelmed by the material, that is, until they sat on it. By the way, in the early 1950s, Farmall International 100 tractors had seats with tags saying genuine foam rubber to stimulate sales. Foam rubber was replaced by polyurethane in Farmall seats in 1956. And in 1985, the honeybee was designated as the official state insect of Missouri. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is here. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Todd. I hope everything's going good and happy Independence Day coming up.
Oh, speaking of that, and it is going very well, what can you tell me about July the 4th across the Midwest?
Well, we're going to have a little bit of a risk of showers and thunderstorms. Unfortunately, kind of similar to what we've been seeing here in recent past days. It'll be a warm and humid day. We shouldn't see a lot of precipitation during the morning or early afternoon, but as we get into the late afternoon, of course, the instability in the atmosphere will start to generate some pop-up showers and thunderstorms across the region. Most of these are going to be very light, but we'll see them from Iowa and Missouri all the way across Illinois into parts of Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky. So the further east you go in this area, the higher the concentration and the more significant the precipitation may become. But I think for the most part, we're talking about very brief showers, might not last more than 10 or 15 minutes, hopefully, and rain totals will probably run mostly up to a quarter of an inch every once in a while. Somebody might get something a little bit greater, up around a half inch. And a lot of this precipitation will diminish as we get into the dusk time of the evening, so hopefully it won't interfere with some of the celebrations coming up.
Should be a great evening for fireworks, I suppose, in that case. When you look ahead and across the growing regions, what do you see in the coming week? It's been relatively cool, gray the last couple of days, but I suspect more sunshine and a bit of heat are on the way.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to evolve to, a little better environment overall. The crops are going to eat this up. The moisture and the cool-off that's been out there here recently was quite welcome after we went through that short-term bout of 80-degree days that occurred about a week ago, and the ground firmed up in some areas. We are getting probably a little more moisture than we would like to see in some of the eastern parts of the Midwest and certainly in the southeastern corner of the country. But the heart of the Midwest will see a decline in precipitation frequency and significance as we move through the weekend and into next week. And temperatures will warm just a bit. We'll get away from these 60 and 70 degree readings and start seeing something a little bit more normal, which would be in the 80s across the area. And that alone will likely stimulate some much better crop development potential. We will have, though, still a risk of showers periodically through the region, and I can't really give us too many days in a row without a risk of a shower or thunderstorm. Most of the precipitation will be light until we get to the early to middle part of next week. At that time, we'll see some stronger storms occurring from Iowa into Ohio, and they will sag southward as time moves forward.
When we last talked, you were a bit concerned about Australia. Has that been alleviated at this point or not?
Western Australia continues to be very dry. They've got most of the crop in the ground, but it is not germinating, emerging, and establishing like it should. Very uneven stands, a lot of worry about production cuts coming up for them. It's cool over there, so we're not losing a lot very quickly. But they've got to have some better rain sometime soon, and we're at least a week away from anything like that happening.
And a very short word on China.
very good conditions, I think, is the bottom line there. They've had a couple pockets of dryness, but every time it's gotten to the point of threatening crops, they've gotten rain. So the bottom line is very good for the majority of that country.
Thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next week.
All right, Todd, take care now.
Hey, you too. That is Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and wraps up this July 3rd edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Bates Commodities, AgriGold, The Andersons, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Services. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.